Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
With Renault's award-winning hybrid and full electric lineup, where style meets tech. Rethink Renault.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, I'll take you inside the Ireland Gateway to Europe trade mission as we visit Washington, D.C. and Philadelphia. Enterprise Ireland will explain how and where opportunities lie despite geopolitical turbulence. We'll hear how AI is causing headaches and opportunities in the world of recruitment. And we'll meet some of the businesses from Ireland, highlighting the importance of the Irish-US relationship. As always, you can email the show, techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. I hope you're well. I am speaking to you now from the 40th floor of a gorgeous Philadelphia skyscraper, looking out at the stunning skyline. We arrived here from Washington on Wednesday evening, and I have to say, I loved it instantly. If you have never been, I would encourage you to add Philadelphia to your travel wish list. I think Aer Lingus fly directly here as well, so you can get here direct, have a few days, potter around. There is incredible history in this city. Shane Coleman actually told me that it is the mural capital city of the world because it has over 4,000 public art installations, including the Washington Monument and obviously the iconic Rocky statue. It has been a gorgeous place to walk around, and I think the beauty of Philadelphia really jumped out at me because, as I say, we landed in from Washington, which is where we had been since last Sunday. And I don't mean this in a bad way, and if you disagree, let me know, techtalk@newstalk.com. No shade at all to Washington, but I was slightly underwhelmed. Myself, Shane, and his producer Claire walked down to the White House on Sunday, and I was expecting this huge wow moment. Think of all the times that we have seen the White House, whether it's on the news, in TV shows, in film. It's been everywhere all the time. So I was expecting the same kind of, oh my gosh, moment I had when I first saw the Sydney Opera House. But as we approached, it was, for lack of a better phrase, a bit meh. There were huge black chain-linked fences all around. The square in the front of the building is a construction site, and there were diggers and huge piles of dirt everywhere. And I just didn't get that oh my gosh moment, and I genuinely had expected it. Washington has been on my want to travel list for years. That being said, however, if you went right up to the chain link fence and if you squinted, you could see the iconic structure, and it looks lovely. But yeah, as I said, slightly disappointing and slightly underwhelming. I also wasn't expecting the city to be so quiet. I was chatting to my mum on the phone one of the days when I was walking back from the incredible Ronald Reagan building, which is where we were broadcasting from, back to the hotel we were staying in. And I couldn't get over how few people I encountered on the 30-minute walk. There was a significant police presence, which perhaps that's the norm there, or it could have been in the wake of the events at last Saturday night's White House Correspondents' Dinner. And indeed the fact that the King of England was in town. But yeah, it was kind of a strange vibe. A few people were onto me on Instagram asking how was the experience going through the immigration at Dublin Airport. So that's one of the best things I love about Dublin Airport, is that I can do the US pre-clearance on this side. So when you land, you literally take your bags and you walk out. You can just go through. You don't even have to show your passport, or at least we didn't when we landed in Washington. The immigration process was completely fine. Now, I do have a visa, so journalists can get a particular type of visa to work in the US, which is what I have. So I walked up, passed my passport across the desk. I was asked what was the purpose of my visit. I said, doing a radio show. He closed my passport, handed it back, and on I went. There was no kind of going through social media or anything like that. But again, if you've had a different experience in the last wee while, I'd love to hear from you. Techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address. Now, given all that's going on in the world at the moment, if you're an entrepreneur, you might think maybe now is not the time to scale and try to crack America. However, from all that I've heard this week, the message seems to be that that is very much not the case. While we were in Washington, I spoke with Kevin Ryan, who's the head of East Coast, based out of New York with Enterprise Ireland. Kevin, it is great to chat with you. Obviously, over the next hour, we are going to hear from Irish businesses in the US and American businesses based in Ireland or that have bases in Ireland. But before we get into all of that, can you just paint the picture of the importance of the Irish relationship with the US when it comes to our businesses that are growing and reaching that global scale?
Sure. And thanks, Jess, for having me on. It's a really critical piece the Irish companies play here in the US. We've got a lot of companies. We've got nearly 1,000 companies now exporting and creating presences now in the US. And that's increasing day on day. So missions like the team that the Gateway to Europe are doing and other trade missions that are going on at various times throughout the year are critically important to visibility and creating awareness of the opportunities that are happening across every state across the US.
People may not know, but Ireland is a significant investor in terms of bringing businesses to the US, just as the US is bringing business to Ireland. That seems to be consistent despite the geopolitical and political changes that have happened. That relationship is very long-standing.
No, it is for sure. And I mean, obviously, Ireland and the US share a long history together. And I suppose this is a year the US is celebrating 250 years. And for much of that, Ireland has shared many, many stories, business and culture across those years. I suppose Ireland plays a vital part in the US. I mean, for a country the size of, we're 5.5 million people plus, and we're number five now in terms of the number, largest source of FDI into the States. So for a country the size of us to be fifth in the US in terms of inward investment, it's a seismic investment, and it's a seismic amount of, importance that the Irish companies play here in the US. I mean, employing upwards of 200,000 people across the US in nearly every state, with just the top 10 of our companies generating about 125,000 jobs. So again, it's a critical part that Ireland's playing in the US.
Mm. Just remind us a little bit about how Enterprise Ireland supports and connects the businesses that do make the move into the US, because I was chatting to a few people last night at the ambassador's residence. And they were saying that there is a bit of a culture shock, even though the commonality of the language and people will be familiar. Making the move to come over to the United States, setting up an office, making connections, making the right connections and then growing. It's a lot to process, particularly for an early enough stage company.
Yeah, no, for sure, Jess. And again, culturally, while we do share a lot between Ireland and the US, doing business in the US is very different to doing business in the UK. It's very different to doing business across Europe and in Asia. So again, I suppose one of the key parts that we play here in the US, and we've 7 offices across the entire US. And again, we do this day in, day out with our client companies. And a big part of what we do is helping to signpost and helping to navigate our client companies as they land in the US. And that initial signposting in terms of where should they go, what should they do, who should they be speaking to, and how to do business. Because again, some of the language, the cultural nuances in terms of doing business, it's very different. It's quite transactional. So again, in that nature, the Irish people don't often have that in their DNA, but they quickly learn with our help.
Yeah, and it varies from state to state. Like I know every year from being part of the Ireland Gateway to Europe delegation, you know, we have been in Austin, we have been in Boston, we are in, as I'm speaking to you now, I'm in Washington, we're going to Philadelphia later in the week. Each of those areas, they do have different ways of doing things, even from how you say hello and the way you carry yourself, you interact with yourself. So that local knowledge, it is of vital importance. It is kind of the first unlocking of the door, right?
No, it is. It is for sure. I mean, certainly being Irish helps get your foot in that door. And as we heard last night at the event, and the ambassador spoke very well about how Ireland is so well received across the US, especially in Congress, especially in DC, where a lot of decisions are made. But again, being Irish can do so much. It can get you maybe a foot in the door, but then having the ability to engage and interact and do business, which I think a lot of Irish people, it's in their DNA. They understand how to do it. They're personable, they're entrepreneurial, they can think outside the box. So that is very much well received in the US, regardless of what state you go from east to west, north to south, that translates. So again, with our help and with the focus of the client companies, and we do a lot of work with client companies on this in terms of how they can engage, how they can interact, the do's and don'ts, and to know before you go kind of attitude. So we do a lot of work with that in terms of helping our clients succeed.
Are there particular parts, and I imagine there are, right? But are there particular parts of the US that are better for certain tech sectors? So, like, is there a cybersecurity hub? Is there a fintech hub? Is there a medtech hub in the US that you would then advise businesses to go to base themselves there because of the rich ecosystem that already exists for their niche?
There is. And again, I mean, you could easily pick, I mean, Boston, for example, where there's a large cluster of med tech and bio companies, we would have a natural landing pad for companies. And it's a natural kind of anchor for companies to land there. And we would have an office there. And we've got a great team there that are helping navigate the opportunities and populate all of those opportunities for our companies. In terms of fintech, I mean, New York, you're not going to get more, I suppose, focus in terms of all the big banks, all the big insurance companies. They're all here. A lot of them are similarly located in Ireland. Also in the southeast, we're seeing where we also have an office in Atlanta. Again, that's a massive payments corridor there for a lot of payments being processed through there. You got massive companies based out of Atlanta. So again, we're starting to see a draw away from either the West Coast or the traditional hubs in on the East Coast in New York into places like Atlanta. AI is changing the entire landscape in terms of how people do business, how people are digitally working, remote working, all those kind of things. So again, it all matters in terms of where people want to set up a base, an initial base. If it's West Coast, it could be media, it could be digital, it could be cyber, equally here in the East Coast. And again, we're seeing a lot with a lot of our clients. Typically, around 35 to 40% of our clients will find a natural landing point here in the East Coast, and then move either westwards from there or down to the south. They will find a natural pathway, but typically, we're seeing the East Coast being the natural kind of jumping on point for the U.S. And we've a great team here in New York, also in Boston, to help with that.
One of the themes of the week so far, and I anticipate it continuing, is obviously the global uncertainty, the geopolitical uncertainty. There's been a lot of talk about tariffs, but there's also been a lot of talk about the resilience that Irish businesses have shown and continue to show. But is there a slowdown of Irish companies making the move to the US, given the level of uncertainty that exists at the moment, given all the talk about tariffs and prices going up and so on? Have things slowed down?
Well, I mean, in a lot of quarters, I mean, obviously there's a lot of companies hugely affected by that, and we're doing our utmost to help them. I mean, we've a number of specific grants and supports, like the Market Research Grant, our new Markets Validation Grant. Again, these are a lot of new supports that we're bringing to clients where they can help navigate new markets, if it's a case that they want to come here or they want to go to other markets. But to go back to your main point, I mean, yes, we are seeing a lot more in terms of clients wanting to come to the US. The US is going to be all and always will be a go-to market for every sector you could possibly think of, be it payments, be it insurance, be it education, whatever it might be, ed tech, construction, high-tech construction engineering. We're getting a lot of uptake in companies coming here as well. So it's on the up continuously. And I suppose there's no better barometer for that than next week we're hosting a largest ever contingent of Irish companies coming to Select USA, which is their biggest show for foreign direct investment and to encourage companies to come to the US. So we've got upwards of 50 companies now making the travel over to the US next week in DC, where we will have Minister Burke, we will have Jennifer Melia, our CEO, coming out to support that. And again, there's going to be a lot of engagement across next week to help these companies engage with the US states that they want to maybe look at expanding into.
And so the like, I know that you're based here. So what's your assessment, your lay of the land? Is this still a good time to grow your business? Even though we don't know what the world's going to look like in 6, 8, 12 months time, the show must go on type thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. The show will always go on. And again, what I would, the kind of words of wisdom I would maybe give to any companies looking is to engage with Enterprise Ireland, to speak to us, to reach out to us either here locally in any of our 7 offices across the US or back to our colleagues in Ireland. Because again, we can help signpost, we can have that initial conversation with them, we can help answer any initial queries that they have, and we can certainly pass on any words of wisdom that we would have from navigating and helping to get into the US. We, as I said, like we've nearly 1,000 companies that have active business here. About 73% of those will have a presence here and are doing business day in, day out. And we're seeing more and more of that. But definitely reach out, talk to us, speak to us. We can help signpost any of these kind of questions that you have, or we can put you in touch with experts. If we don't necessarily know the answers, we can put you in touch with experts who certainly will.
Brilliant stuff. Kevin, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thanks, Jess.
That was Kevin Ryan of Enterprise Ireland speaking to me earlier this week from Washington, D.C. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll hear how AI is causing headaches and opportunities in the world of recruitment.
Tech Talk on News Talk.
With Renault, leaders in tech, built to entertain and keep you safe. Rethink Renault.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk, coming to you this week from Philadelphia after an incredible week with the Ireland Gateway to Europe crew. We started out in Washington and we're heading home in a few hours, which I'm devastated about because I've loved my time in Philadelphia so far. But rather than just continue with my travelogue, we are going to bring you some of the conversations with people I've met over the last week or so, because there have been really interesting conversations about what's going on here in the US, but also what's likely to happen as a result of Ireland's presidency of the EU. That was a big talking point this week. Another talking point, there was no escaping it, was AI. It really has dominated so much of the conversation, and it's really interesting to hear how it's impacting different sectors. One of the big areas is recruitment. This is something that has come up time and again. And I was delighted to chat with Niall and Declan McNiff of Real Time Recruitment. And I started by asking them to remind us what it is that they do.
Okay, we basically supply tech and transformation staff across the island of Ireland, north and south. And we also do the east coast of the US. And again, it's contract, permanent, and then we've also supplied nearshore teams in Portugal.
And just remind us, you have like a significant enough operation, not only in Ireland but in the US. Just tell us a little bit about your own setup.
Yeah, it's basically we work all tech roles along the East Coast, and it's mainly Boston. And it was off the back of clients in, with an award-winning service, thank God, in Ireland. And clients turned around and said, look, we wish we had your service in the US. We could do with it. The US, it's a lot about volume, whereas quality, when it comes to recruitment, it's quality. Quality, if you're providing quality resumes, as they're called in the US, it saves time. Save time, save money, and you get the right people on board quicker.
In terms of recruitment, like, there's been so much talk about this space over the last wee while, with AI being a key player here, not only in terms of people who are looking for jobs using AI to put their CVs together, recruiters using AI to kind of weed out some resumes and CVs, and then also AI taking some jobs. There's been a huge shift, even in the past 12 months since we last spoke. What's the status of the market, and how different is it from, or how different are the US and Ireland at the moment in terms of the recruitment market?
Yeah, it's funny because we were with clients there over this week, and there's so many shifting sands, very much so since we met last year, Jess. And you know, you're getting clients talking about, you know, CVs being matched to job specs and things like that there. And we spoke about a dangerous sort of situation where you could arguably have bots talking to bots. So there's an awful lot of things happening in the market at the moment.
Yeah, and look, it's being authentic, Jess. The one thing that AI can't replace is the human touch,
yeah.
The human element, and we've heard that all week here in America. There's a lot of companies, we talked to startups, and even they were saying, and there was some AI, there was a guy that presented yesterday, and they do mapping of all the infrastructure, the city's infrastructure, then they use AI to produce the element of when it needs repaired, and when so that the city can put its budgets to great effect. But it's people-based.
Yeah.
He said the people have to get the relationships, the people have to sign the contracts, the people have to be out. But the other side of the people end, which you talked about there on the CVs and all this false presentation by AI, it's being authentic.
Yeah.
People that are authentic and people that have good communication skills will be the big winners.
But has this disruption from AI created a big sort of shift in terms of what people understand about your sector? Because again, there's this notion that AI is just going to come in, swoop it all, but then, as Declan said, humanity plays a key role. And also, I would not be very good in a job interview. I've never done one, but I know I wouldn't be very good in a job interview. But it's when you get to know someone, you get to meet someone, you get to see their real strengths. AI can't do that sort of presentation to ensure that you are finding the right people for your business.
Yeah, at the end of the day, people, you know, you're looking for sort of certain characteristics, certain traits. A CV, resume is only going to get you so far. So ultimately, it's about looking for those traits. We've had a number of meetings this week. We spoke about certain traits that make great entrepreneurs. And again, these are things that are authentic, that people, you know, you can only get from actually meeting people. And we met clients this week. They said they had very much sort of put the foot down on having face-to-face interviews again, that they were not going to hire anybody unless they met everybody face-to-face, because they just wanted to basically get to know the individual much better and see if they were a cultural fit.
Mm. And so from your business's point of view then at the moment, what are the key priorities and the key focuses to ensure your own growth, but also working for your clients then?
Well, like everybody else, we're looking to apply AI in our business, Jess, and it's about job redesign and the correct job redesign. So you're being specific, you're taking the tasks that are routine, and so you're trying to transform, there is a transformation of the role of the staff, going that it's more meaningful, you're having more conversations, they're out at more meetings, because even we saw this week here in the US, being out with clients, shaking hands, having real conversations. We got access to some people this week that is absolutely unbelievable, that you don't get if you're just another voice on the end of a keyboard or on the end of a phone. So it's face to face, and that's where the juice is, and that's where the beauty is. And the companies that adopt that to free up their staff from the routine, A, it makes them empowers them, B, it pushes the business, and lastly, it makes it more meaningful for everybody involved.
Yeah, I think AI for pretty much everybody, including ourselves, it's just about freeing up time to work on the more higher value tasks.
And what, like, again, in terms of training and investment in the AI, because this is a bugbear of mine at the minute, there are so many platforms and solutions out there, and I see businesses just spending money because something has AI in the blurb, but they don't fully understand how, where and when it serves their business. There's almost a recruitment need for the AI to make sure it's the right fit. It's like finding good staff. You need to make sure the tools fit your business.
There is, and we were laughing about it the other day. Whoever cracks that code and becomes a consultancy, because look, some of the AI, it varies. They talk about senior people, and senior developers will become the sort of authenticators of the AI work, and they'll be the ones that verify everything. But then there's other people that were saying that the best people with AI are straight out of college,
yeah,
and ones still studying. The ones that are using these tools and adopting it and are able to play about with them,
yeah,
in practice, and so they're bringing it into the professional workforce. But definitely having the right skill, because you're far better training your staff in AI than replacing them.
Yeah.
It's harder to replace people, and don't get me wrong, if you're training staff in AI and some don't adopt it, they have to be replaced, because it's the people with AI skills that will replace those that don't. But there's industries like customer service, and that I don't think it'll impact that big. You might have the first layer, but there's nothing more frustrating than getting on with an AI agent and going nowhere on the back of a call. So
yeah, I think like last year when we spoke, it was very much talking around things like ChatGPT, and everybody was very much in that experimentation phase. I think the companies now that are, the companies now that are succeeding more are those companies that are actually embedding AI into their business models, as opposed to just layering more and more AI tech tools on top. And like, obviously, it's no secret there's huge sums being spent on AI. So ultimately, people are going to want to see a return on investment.
And in terms of, because we've been seeing and the forecasts in terms of tech jobs and all the rest, and again, this is tech shows, so we're focused on the tech sector for a minute, but there is a bit of a downturn. Companies are letting people go. We know that Meta are reducing their headcount significantly. Other companies are either going into a hiring freeze or tightening their belt or restructuring their companies. What does that forecast or potential forecast mean for your business then?
Well, there was a great Gartner report actually on the impact of AI, and they see it as sort of net neutral this year. Yes, look, if the big companies are laying off people, that gives every CEO around the world asking, do we have the right team? Do we are the team of the right skill? Do we need as many and not on the team? But that produces, look, there's new roles appearing already. If you can get AI trainers, AI prompters, and this is the next generation of roles that will come through. And that actual report, the Gartner report, expects that these roles will be clearer defined. We're definitely in an area, Niall spoke about shifting sands there, Jess, and there's a lot of fear. And we've seen that firsthand over here in America, fear of what AI and the impact of AI, and a lot of people that you just touched on, they don't know where to apply it. And so you can spend the right money, and there's a number of companies that are waiting to see what others are doing. But this is the first year we've seen a lot of companies that have decided, okay, we've sat in our hands long enough to try and work out what it is, there's specific tasks and there's specific problems. You only apply AI to solve a problem. There's no point, as you said, otherwise you're wasting money.
Yeah,
and I think the three things are, it's like people are using it for cost savings, but the other side is there's potential upsides in revenue generation. It can actually remodel potentially how you do your business. The way you're doing it now could be done possibly better with AI. So there are different ways, and like I think along this journey, everybody's learning and improving. But yeah, look, it's interesting times to be sure.
So what are we going to talk about next year when we are all together, no doubt, on this trip? What do you think the world's going to look like, and what will we chat about then?
Well, hopefully you'll need us here, Jess, to talk to, and we won't be replaced. Look, who knows? And even a lot of companies were saying their forecasts and how to forecast 12 months ahead, 2 years ahead, is very difficult. We spoke to a number of big clients this week, and they're saying even forecasting a quarter,
it's
very, very difficult. So, look, 12 months... Are we more settled and we're more down the road than we were 12 months ago? Yes. And there's big investments going into AI now. I expect that to accelerate and to be more next year. Is half the workforce going to be out of work? No chance. And I say that for the people that want to upskill. You have to upskill. You have to embrace it, because it is coming and it's coming apace.
Yeah, I think... you have to get on board on the AI. You have to embrace it. A year ago when we were here, AI was maybe one-liner on a job spec.
Yeah.
Now it's far more prominent. And as I say, you have to embrace it, because if you don't embrace it in the tech world, you're going to be left behind. That's what we're hearing.
Yeah, that was Niall and Declan McNiff of Real Time Recruitment. The issue of AI in recruitment is fascinating to me. I know that there are companies who are using, as I said there, the AI to auto-reject CVs and cover letters if they don't have certain keywords. There's also huge concern in certain parts of the world about using AI in recruitment, because it can have bias built in, and that is a serious issue. We spoke about it on this program before with people with certain surnames, certain addresses, based on their picture. If there's a picture on their CV, they can get auto-rejected by the AI, which is massively concerning. especially as we heard in the chat there with the lads, when humanity and the human touch is what makes a business, I do have serious concerns about it, and we'll probably come back to it again at some stage. But to kind of go back and focus on the human touch for a second, I met a fantastic company in Washington on Wednesday. They're called Link Strategic Partners, and I caught up with their Chief of Staff and Executive Vice President, Jamal Holtz, who told me a little bit more about what they do.
So Link Strategic Partners, we are an international communications and community engagement firm. And so we pride ourselves on being a social impact consulting firm that offers professional services in the realm of communications and engagement. And that's everything from helping people rethink and rebrand how they present their companies, to helping them think and plan around like stuff like strategic planning or community engagement. And so we get to do some real hyper local work on the global scale. Mm-hmm. So we are headquartered in Washington, D.C., but we get the honor of doing work all across the globe. We have offices in six U.S. cities and as well in the United Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And so we get to do some very hyper-local work across the globe. And that's everything from economic development to trade to really helping businesses strategic plan and understand their priorities of the moment and do some community-based work.
Mm. It must be fascinating to have that global perspective on community level projects, because as we know, and you know, this week we are in Washington, we are in Philadelphia, and then I'm going back home to Dublin, and those three places alone have very different identities, very different core issues that matter to people on the ground. How vital is it that your team get to know the love language and the business language and the community language of those different markets?
Yeah, in the words of Dublin, I would say that we're lucky. Mm-hmm. We are lucky to be able to do to create a model and that can be adapted across the globe, but also to be able to do that hyperlocal work where it's not just about doing work locally, but it's also about understanding where are their synergies, where do we find partnerships, how do you leverage the global work you're doing to help bring and understand some of those global best practices into communities across the world, right? And so it is a real treat to be able to understand and learn different cultures, different ways of work, and understand different organizations and how they set themselves up across the globe. And so whether that's doing work in Rio de Janeiro or being able to do some work in Dublin, in which we hope to do. And I think this trade mission was a good part of helping us to understand what are some of the opportunities that not only exist here in the U.S., but what are some opportunities and synergies that we can help deploy and support and work with companies in Dublin as they're looking to do more work in the U.S. or across the globe as well.
Mm. Yeah, that's one of the things that stood out with me or to me over the last few days is we obviously hear about the U.S. all the time. We're reading about the U.S. all the time, but it is completely different when you have boots on the ground and you get to talk to local people and just understand what's going on. In terms of the impact of your work, has it evolved and has it become more challenging to work globally given all that's going on in the world right now?
I think globally it has not been a challenge to do global based work. I actually think global work has kind of amplified in moments like now when we're talking about tariffs and trade and all those things. But what we're starting to see a lot more of now is city to city, community to community type of partnerships. Mm-hmm. And that's some of the stuff we help facilitate. We were able to help and work and support with the trade centers of DC, Dublin, and Boston to do a three-way partnership on promoting trade, right? That's not a federal government to federal government that or that national government. It's the cities that are looking to partner and do the work, because mm-hmm. The work still has to happen. And so when we get to be able to say, hey, we do community-based or communications or strategic planning work in Dublin, people like to hear that when we're doing work here in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And so as a firm that gets that chance to do all, to offer all the services that we offer across the world and then get to say, hey, here's what worked in Dublin, or here's what worked in Manchester, U.K., here's what worked in Rio. Now let's think of what will work best for your community, mm-hmm. for your organization or for the problem or issue that you're trying to challenge. And so I think global work is expanding in this moment.
I was reading up on the company, your organization, and I was struck by the pride in the language used on the website to talk about the diversity of your team and the inclusivity of your team. How important is that? Is this something that just appears on a website, or is it very much ingrained in the DNA?
It's certainly ingrained in our DNA and our founding and our practice. We can't call ourselves a social impact firm and not really mean the impact part of what we do. And so our youngest employee is 16 and our oldest employee is 94, 98.
Wow.
And they are not outliers. We're very intentional about building a team that is reflective of the work that we do and the communities in which we serve and operate within. And that's the same thing as most traditional consulting firms hire consultants, career-long consultants. For us as a consulting firm, we hire people who are practitioners, people who come from different walks of life and backgrounds, everything from former government officials to former healthcare executives to former teachers on our team, and we train and teach them on the work that we consult in. And so when we can work with companies and say, hey, we actually have lived experience on our team that applies to the work that you do, that makes our work 10 times more rewarding and makes the people who are doing the work more invested. And so so as a social impact consulting firm, we pride ourselves on the team that we build.
Yeah. And I think that that focus and that celebration of the human aspect and the humanity of this is really worth noting, particularly in the era of AI. We're hearing a lot of companies that are swapping out the humans for the machines. But that example of, you know, somebody in their 90s being involved, because they would have a completely different vantage point than your 16-year-old.
Yeah.
So that humanity seems to be the kernel of the company.
Yeah, and that 90-year-old shows up to work. I was just on a team meeting with him 30 minutes ago, and there, oftentimes weekly he sends us the list of things he needs us to focus on as our senior advisor. And he's active, and that type of mentality also helps the 16-year-old who's exploring and understanding what does the workforce look like, what does it mean, but also helps our intergenerational learning to be able to say, here's what it's like to be 16 years old. And so we have to, as the world evolves, as the work evolves, we also have to ensure that our workplace and the people is adaptive to that too.
Jamal, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
I'm excited. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that was Jamal Holtz, Chief of Staff and Executive VP at Link Strategic Partners. Right, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll meet some of the Irish businesses showing their wares here in the United States.
Tech Talk on News Talk.
With Renault, leaders in tech, built to entertain and keep you safe. Rethink Renault.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As ever, if you have any questions for me, techtalk@newstalk.com is the email address, and we will get to some of your tech questions in just a quick minute. But before that, I want to continue on bringing you some of the voices from Ireland Gateway to Europe. Here is who I met.
Rob Walsh, I'm the founder of a business called Spud. Spud is a travelling events business, and we have two streams to our business. One is we bring corporate groups from all around the world into Ireland, and that can be for everything from a board meeting, an off-site, a large event, or what we call an incentive trip or a President's Club reward trip. We also work with companies on relocations into Ireland, so that's another service we do. The second side of our business is we work as a luxury leisure operator locally. So we work largely with luxury tour operators who would work with Spud as a local partner on the ground. So once the client lands on the ground, we organize everything. So that's including, you know, transport, logistics for the entire time a client is here, accommodations and experiences. So the big thing that you know sets us apart is our experience and our ability to deliver experiences. So my background is in the world of experiential events and marketing, so you know, quite creative. And the whole concept of this business is to apply those creative principles instead to a brand experience, to a visitor experience, so that can be a corporate or leisure.
And just paint a picture, because one of my things that I often say is I'd love to come to Ireland as a tourist and see it from, you know, the tourist point of view. There's so much to offer back home. What type of events and programs do you put together for the business clients who come over?
Well, it's highly personalized to why a group would like to come. So For example, last year we did a group around the NFL, so we hosted a board meeting in Dublin and then got into the game, obviously, but we rooted the entire experience around sport. So we had them in the Wicklow Hills for a local game between two rival villages. So that was that. We hosted an evening experience tied to more around culture and language, but again, back to Gaelic games and sport. So another one we did was around adventure. We worked with a special forces, former special forces rangers in the Wicklow Mountains to design an entire experience and program around the challenges that that company was facing from a goals and a future kind of planning standpoint, and developed an entire experience in the mountains for them. So it's highly personalized, but again, as I said, there's always the things the companies or people want to tick off the list, and we try and incorporate the two together, which is what makes us unique.
Brilliant. Obviously, there's been a lot of talk over the last wee while about what's happening in the Middle East, the impact on fuel, everything that's happening in the US. I've spoken to a number of people here over the last few days who are saying the tourist numbers to America are down. Has all of the geopolitical stuff had an impact on your business and the number of people looking to travel to Ireland?
Well, I haven't seen an impact yet. I mean, I've talked to some suppliers who would, you know, probably see it at the cold front. I don't think we've seen too much of an impact now. The odd one may be coming from the other side of the world because of the transition and where they need to come through the Middle East. But as I said, for my main market would be the United States, and I haven't seen it yet. Now, I am hearing that oil prices will be affected in Q4, which would be concerning if this can't be ironed out.
We're here with Ireland Gateway to Europe. It's been an incredibly busy but productive week. Just tell me a little bit about what has you here. Why did you decide to get involved?
Well, as a small startup business in the last 2 years, you know, it's a very competitive market, Ireland, and I was really trying to look at different ways of winning business and promoting my business spud. So, you know, if I was to go to the regular travel shows and the trade shows that are specific to the tourism business, both corporate and leisure, you know, I'd probably be swamped out. So I thought that Gateway was an opportunity for me to get in front of business leaders right across the United States and tell them about my business and how Spud is doing things differently.
And we started the week in Washington. You guys went to Delaware. We're now sitting on a busy street in Philadelphia. What were your kind of key takeaways from the week?
I think collaboration. I mean, every city is kind of telling us a different story and why it's amazing to work with them. And I think that's a great opportunity. I mean, for example, in Washington, you've obviously got access to government and big business. Delaware, I didn't realize that, you know, it was the corporate capital of the United States. So that was very interesting to learn that the concentration of, you know, global corporate companies in Delaware and the opportunities that exist for cross-collaboration between Ireland and Delaware. And then in Philadelphia, I mean, we're hosted by Boston Consulting Group this afternoon, and I think just understanding and learning about the opportunities are there. But I think, you know, Ireland's always, the United States is not a hard sell for us coming over here. There's obviously a deep respect between the two nations, and I think that going on this trip has just really reinforced that I don't think those opportunities are going to go anytime soon.
Martin Hennessy, I'm Business Acquisition Lead for the East of Ireland for VHI, Jess.
Can you just tell me a little bit about your role at VHI?
So I've been at VHI for 38 years. My background is sales, and in recent times I've moved into the FDI role alongside my colleague Anne-Marie Brophy, who's also here in the US with me.
You mentioned that you've been with VHI for many years now, which is incredible. How have you seen the importance, the awareness and the use of health insurance change over that time?
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, you know, like there's such an emphasis now on wellness and prevention, and we're very big in that space. And I suppose we're very much in the healthcare provision space now as well. So we're not just an insurer; we've built a healthcare system for our members. So the VHI 360 network is uniquely available to our members. We have, you know, dedicated wellness consultants who work with our corporate clients and stuff like that. So look, we all know that a healthy and a happy workforce is a productive workforce. So that's what we do. We support our corporate clients in terms of making sure that their staff are healthy and happy.
And that does seem to be from my point of view anyway, it seems like it's a relatively new addition, the corporate wellness side, to be able to log on to a portal and do whether it's yoga classes or the GP or whatever it might be. From a value add point of view, That must be a real, a very good sell to the American companies looking to get into Ireland to offer that to the staff.
Absolutely. To be fair, like the likes of your tech firms over here would have been very much ahead of the curve in terms of wellness and have been for many, many years. And you know, they've scaled into Ireland, so they've brought their wellness propositions over too. But it's very much expected now from a healthcare partner that you provide them with a very, very strong wellness proposition alongside a really, really good health insurance and dental insurance proposition as well.
And so we are here in Philadelphia. You were in Delaware yesterday. We were in Washington at the start of the week. What have been some of your key takeaways, as you, not only with your VHI hat on, but just even being part of the group?
Yeah, look, the focus on AI, mm-hmm. it's all over the shop, and digital, you know, like, and things like digital wellness, as you mentioned, like, it's, we're very big on that, and, like, we've built our own, we have a digital platform, wellness platform and stuff like that, so, but look, it's evolving all the time, and, you know, the AI, everywhere you turn, AI has been spoken about and been mentioned, so, yeah, there's a lot going on in those areas.
Yeah, that was Rob of Spud and Martin of VHI. They are taking part in Ireland Gateway to Europe. We were having a chat on what was possibly the busiest street in Philadelphia, but sure look and sure listen, we are where we are. Right, we have time for just a few quick tech questions. As always, if you have any for me, techtalk@newstalk.com is the place to go. First up this week, we have an email here from Mary who says, "Hi Jess, I have a Huawei P30 Lite phone. I can no longer update apps. Can you suggest a good phone that will last? I use a lot of apps and photos. I would like a lot of storage and good battery life and a good camera. Max budget is 400. If it was less, that would be great. Any advice, much appreciated." Okay, Mary, let's have a look at what our options are. So the P30 Lite was a great phone. Like John Riley and I often talk about how great those Huawei phones were back in the day. So in terms of your requirements from a tech point of view, but then also looking at the budget, I think you should look at the Samsung Galaxy A55. This is a beautiful phone. I'm a big fan of the A range from Samsung. It's in and around 350 quid, so it's under your budget. The camera is fantastic. Most models come with, I think it's 128 gig out of the box, so straight out of the box. But it does have a micro SD slot if you want to get one and put it in to give you more storage for photos. But I'd imagine you wouldn't need it. Battery is great, so 5,000 milliamp battery. Camera is brilliant and it will tick as many boxes as I think can be ticked in that instance. The other brand you could look at, now I haven't tested it myself, but I know John Riley is a big fan of the Xiaomi Redmi brand of phones. I think you can get them from three. So the Xiaomi Redmi Note 13, there's a pro version of that. It would again be under budget, but has a massive amount of storage built in, great battery life, and a stunning camera as well. They would be your options. So I do hope that helps, Mary, and that you enjoy your new phone. Right, that is it from me this week. If you've missed any of the show, you can listen back in full on the Go Loud app. Just search for Tech Talk. I want to say a huge thank you to the entire crew at Ireland Gateway to Europe for hosting us this week. Big shout out to Jamie, who was herding cats. It was just wonderful to watch. But Jamie, you did it. You're fantastic as always. So thank you so much. A big thanks as well to the Hard Shoulder team for letting me tag along and hang out with them for the week. But yeah, that's it. It's a bank holiday weekend. Enjoy. Hopefully, is there going to be sunshine when I land home? Who knows? Probably not. But enjoy the extra day of the long weekend. John and the lads are up next here on Off the Ball. I'll chat to you next week.